Welcome once again to Cinemaholics, the major motion podcast where we talk about the biggest and best films coming to theaters and streaming online. From the San Francisco Bay Area, I'm your creator, John Agroni, film editor for InBetweenDrafts.com. And from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, he's a freelance film writer. And Will, I have always wondered, Will Ashton, why you have a hole in your head like that. Now I know, it's because you're a robot.
Yep, you figured it out. I've always said I was a robot.
I didn't take you literally though, but thankfully Gareth Edwards knew, and so he made a whole movie about it. This week we're talking about The Creator, which hit theaters this past weekend, and it's an original sci-fi movie. You don't see that very often, and as you can imagine, it's a new movie coming out at the beginning of October in 2023. You know what that means? It didn't make money.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And this is in the wake, too, of the WGA strike pretty much being over.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big announcement. That's the big news today. Not today, but this past week or so. Things are kind of moving toward normalcy. SAG-AFTRA is hopefully going to be wrapping up their negotiations as well. And it's been a weird season of entertainment, Will Ashton, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, just before I saw the film, you were just like, yeah, this podcast isn't doing as well because of the strikes.
Yeah.
They're in our lowest month in a while. Anyway, enjoy the film.
No, literally our lowest month since we started the podcast.
Wow.
Like, the month of September was like the month of September in 2017 in terms of, yeah. And a lot of that, for listeners who want to know some inside baseball, this happens whenever the studios don't promote movies as much. Like, it's a combination of things, but it's mainly the movies coming out aren't that notable, and like for whatever reason, like in 2020, there's not like marketing going on in Hollywood. So Will and I are kind of just talking about whatever. And most people who listen to our show, I guess as it turns out, they want to know if it's worth going to the cinema to watch a movie. Well, I'll go listen to the Cinemaholics. They're there already, aren't they? They're always there. That's the whole point of the aholics part.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to put pressure on our listeners because I like them all and I respect them for listening to the show, but I feel like they kind of need to hold their end of the bargain a bit. Got to talk about the show, get people listening again, I guess. You get me worried there, John, about people not listening to our fine little podcast.
I could, you know what? I'm more, you know, heartened and warmed by the people who do stick with us, because still get downloads, and you know, people keep coming back and they're like, yeah, I don't care about Haunting in Venice. I don't care about Flora and Son. But
yeah,
whatever. I want to check in with John and Will, and it's not like I like Mad Men or One Piece, so Cinemaholics it is.
I was gonna say, I mean, I did see Saw X, which I'm pretty sure was the highest grossing film of this past weekend, but you being the little worrywart, scared pants, you didn't choose to see the movie, so we couldn't talk about it together.
I hate the Saw movies.
I think they're pointless.
The last one I saw was Saw 6, Saw 5, it was one of those. Ooh. Are there 5 or 6?
I mean, now there are 10, but
I don't know, man.
But
at a certain point,
The fifth one's one of the worst ones, and the sixth one's one of the better ones. So I'm not quite sure which one you're referring to.
I think it was the fifth one, because I remember the fifth one was just god-awful. Like, it was such a terrible just movie. And I didn't watch Jigsaw,
You're better off not watching it.
There you go. But no, we're still doing our thing here on the show. And hopefully soon, you know, we're going to be getting into a more robust cinema season. You know, streaming has been pretty wild lately, that's for sure. I know, you know, we kind of briefly talked about last week, all the stuff coming out. But movies, too. I mean, you know, this coming week we have The Exorcist Believer, which I just saw. And, I mean, spoiler alert, I guess. I don't think you and I wouldn't be surprised if you ended up just not watching it for personal reasons of like, you know what, John, let's just talk about dumb money a little late. I don't know.
No, I was going to say, I will watch Exorcist Believer, but I feel like you kind of need to do something for me, which is either you have to actually watch Saw X, which
no,
you don't actually need to see anything other than like the first or second Saw to get in, because it's like, I don't want to say a prequel, it is a sequel, but it's a sequel to the first film, not, it's decanonizing, but it's like a prequel to the other sequels. See the first two and be fine. Or I would say we should also review William Friedkin's last film, I think it's the K-9 Mutiny Colony, or it's on Showtime. It's coming out the same day as The Exorcist Believer. I feel like my conscience would be clear if we also talked about the last William Friedkin film in addition to this bastardized continuation of his most famous film.
Not a bad idea. I do want to kind of make clear that like I didn't think The Exorcist Believer was very good, but I have seen people just really go to town on the movie, and I think a little excessively. Like I don't think it's that bad or anything. In fact, it's pretty watchable. It's just, it's so hard watching a movie trying to franchise up like legitimately one of the great horror movies. And like, I haven't seen the Exorcist sequels, and I guess it's a different thing with Halloween, because like Halloween, that was bad enough, but at least it's like, it's Michael Myers. I mean, it's okay, fine. I've seen like 5 attempts to do Halloween again, and then getting David Gordon Green to come back to do another Exorcist, though, it just feels like, ironically, you know, sacred text. You know what I mean? So I would love to have a longer conversation about the original Exorcist. You never really talked about it, huh? And that's a movie I'm very passionate about.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's a great movie. I mean,
you said the other day, it's like, you've never seen it.
Oh, I was joking because you don't watch horror movies.
Yeah, I was a little offended. I was like, what? Is it because I've never brought up the Exorcist? I mean, I guess I don't bring it up much.
It's because you avoid all these horror movies you see. So I was pretending that The Nun 2 and A Haunting in Venice are like the first two horror movies you've ever seen.
You have these fun little imaginary scenarios you like to dream up, I guess. I don't know. But no, we're going to talk now, though, about The Creator, which is definitely not a movie that I really expected to come out like at this time of the year. A movie like this, I guess I should say, because I kind of teased it at the top, but I mean, it is super rare to see like a truly original sci-fi movie with a modest budget, right? Like this isn't High Life from, you know, Celine Sciamma, Claire Denis. Right. This isn't like a low budget kind of indie sci-fi. This is like a, you know, like $80 million, which is, you know, mid-sized by today's standard. Like 15 years ago, that'd be considered huge. And it's on the big screen. It's not a Netflix movie. It's not on Tubi or whatever the, you know, it's in theaters. And it has, you know, some real talent behind it. Allison Janney is in the movie along with John David Washington. And this is Gareth Edwards, the director of Rogue One. He did a Star Wars movie. He did the 2014 Godzilla movies. Say again?
Well, I was saying he sort of directed Rogue One. It was like kind of co-opted from him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
that's one of those movies where you can kind of tell where you see his fingerprints on certain parts. It's like once Darth Vader shows up, you're just like, oh, Gareth Edwards is like on a bathroom break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, in fairness, I haven't watched Andor yet. Tony Gilroy is basically like the uncredited mastermind behind Rogue One. And I feel like the stuff that, I don't know, like I said, I don't know who did what exactly, but from what I've heard, Tony Gilroy kind of included more of the like overt Star Wars reference things, which is what I actually took issue with both times I watched Rogue One. I think the actual like doomed mission with the people on this kind of more gritty, grungy version of Star Wars is really compelling. And I think that's the stuff that Gareth Edwards really brings to it, especially like the cold open with Mads Mikkelsen. Like that's definitely a very kind of Gareth Edwards.
We were talking about Garth Davis before. Sorry, Garth, yeah. That's why. No, and I think the things about Rogue One that didn't work at all for me are just like all the crisscrossing around the galaxy during the second act, and there's just a lot of like drama tilting, and it's all interspersed with good material. I mean, I think Cassian Andor, his introduction to the whole movie, I mean, there's a reason they made a whole show around him. He was just like an instantly intriguing character. And I know you haven't watched the show. The show I did end up watching way later than everybody else, but you know, fantastic. And I mean, I think Tony Gilroy, you know, the mastermind behind that, Now, Chris Weitz co-wrote Rogue One with Tony Gilroy. He also co-wrote this movie. Mm-hmm. And this movie's, you know, one of the things I said in my review, I had a feeling that a lot of critics would have the knives out for this one, because it does kind of run the danger of evoking so many other sci-fi movies that I think some people might take that as a criticism. It's like there's too much Blade Runner in this. There's too much District 9 and Akira and The Matrix or The Animatrix. There's too much Ridley Scott. There's too much Aliens. And like, where's the identity for Gareth Edwards, right? And so that's the first thing I think to keep in mind. It's like, as original a concept as this is, it isn't really about anything all that new, but just like a few little subversions. So the main plot takes place about 40 years in the future. And in this world, it's kind of like an alt version of our future, where apparently artificial intelligence was invented like before our current timeline. It's been a thing for a while. And AI has been at this point like totally, you know, almost totally extinguished in the entire world, except for like this small part of this place called New Asia. Mm-hmm. So it's like a conglomerate of like Eastern countries. You can actually tell that it's like multiple countries, because if you look at some of the writing there, I noticed that like, you know, it's coded as like Chinese. There's people speaking Chinese, but there's also Japanese being mixed in as well. There's Japanese like, you know, kanji, like in certain places. So they try to like really sell that this is like some kind of like union, united, you know, states of Asia, if you will.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I was going to say the montage at the beginning kind of reminded me a bit of like Watchmen, where you get like that kind of opening, you know, credits where you see like this alternate history, like very familiar landmarks, but from this alternative timeline. I don't think it's quite as effective as that, but it is like a very intriguing way to kind of get us into this alternate universe of ours.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen Animatrix, but very similar to the Animatrix short in that anthology movie, where they have like a whole thing about how the Matrix happens. And, you know, it's kind of similar to that. The montage is also a lot like Fallout. I know you haven't played the Fallout video games, but they also kind of have this like retro futuristic vibe to them. So all that said, The concept of the movie is that AI has been at war with humanity because there was this nuclear explosion in LA, and America blamed AI for it and then decided to just like ban AI and destroy it everywhere. So the movie is really about like the American military industrial complex. Mm-hmm. They have like literally like a space laser called the Nomad. So, you know, you got the more the Star Wars kind of the Death Star kind of thing coming in there.
I was
drone strikes.
You know, I was actually kind of thinking it was funny that, like, you remember how in the 2010s, like, every superhero movie would have, like, a blue beam in the sky? I like this movie. Yeah. Is just like, this blue beam is just gonna kill everybody. Like, yeah, it's just, like, always, you know, and I think it's way more effective in this than it is, like...
I just wish, instead of...
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just gonna say, instead of blue, I wish it was red, white, and blue.
Sure.
It'd be even more... you know,
effective. Yeah.
Metaphor.
I think it was, yeah, it was too subtle as it was. I think we really needed to delay home.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so the movie centers around this guy named Joshua, who's an special forces agent played by John David Washington. He is sent into New Asia to try to find this person called the Nirmata, or Creator. So the person who is like creating all this modern AI, but he has like a personal reason to be in this mission, because his pregnant wife, Maya, played by Gemma Chan, died years ago during kind of a mission gone wrong, you know, mm-hmm. while he was there. And so he believes, though, because of just some revelations that happen about that, she might still be alive. So he goes behind enemy lines. And while he's trying to figure out the truth of what happened, he comes across this mysterious child played by Madeline Una Voiles, who I would consider a revelation. I think is quite wonderful in this movie. And she turns out to be also a machine. But the movie is also like, okay, yeah, there's AI, there's like robots. There's like two main ones. There's one that look a lot like humans with a hole in their heads, right? And then you have the robots that look kind of like robots, automatons. But there aren't like AI children. Like, apparently that's like not a thing. But they never really, I guess, get into that. So, well, again, there's more Star Wars, because then it's like he has his own baby Yoda with him. And, you know, they have to go do stuff.
I mean, they literally call it the child.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. Yeah. But no, I mean, I mean, it makes sense why they wouldn't have like AI children. Like they just want them to be like fully evolved from the get go.
Yeah. They don't want them to age. They can't age. So what's the point?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But no, I mean, I definitely agree that that performance is so crucial to this movie working, and obviously putting a lot on a young performer, especially one who's never been in a movie before. And I think a lot of the strengths of this film really come down to that key performance for sure.
I would say so. And I've been kind of, you know, having an interesting time looking at the different takes around this movie. And I had a feeling like while I was watching it, I was like, this movie really works for me. I'm really, really into this movie. I'm so happy that I like it this much because I don't want Ridley and Scott and Denis Villeneuve to be the only directors in Hollywood who get big budgets for sci-fi movies. I want other people to as well. And I just think this movie just really, like, I found it, you know, my criticisms of it are certainly there. Like, this movie's a little bit skin deep in terms of like what it's saying. It was like, AI, they're just like us, you know? And I think a lot of it too can be a little predictable, sure. But I think the thing that really got me with this movie is like the combination of the special effects and the staging of it. Like a lot of this stuff, like one of the movies I didn't mention that this one evokes for me a lot is like Bridge on the River Kwai, like, you know, Heart of Darkness, like these Full Metal Jacket, like these movies where I remember the set pieces. I remember like how it's all about logistics. It's all, you know, and it's about real warfare, and they have the personal stakes wrapped up in there too. But it was just interesting to me, fascinating really, to see like what would a war really be like between like humans and machines. And I think like we've had a lot of movies that have like hinted at that sort of thing, but then they always like dance away from it. You know, like Terminator. It's like, well, we can't, we'll show you, we'll give you 30 seconds. You earned it. But like, we never really get to see it. We never get to see the war stuff actually going down. And I think that stuff is really interesting to see here. For a long time, I thought like, how cool would it be, right? To, you know, have like something like that in Star Wars, like the droids have their own like little revolution. You know what I mean? Like they're always getting their memories wiped. What if they decided, you know what, I'm going to wipe your memory. How about it? That's kind of my wish fulfillment coming into this.
I guess very iRobot of you to say, yeah.
That's another thing, iRobot. Yeah, it's not really like a war. It's just like a tense, it's kind of a sci-fi thriller, which is cool. But yeah, it's always teased, but we never get it for real.
Yeah, I mean, in addition to the films you mentioned there, I feel like the one that really came to mind for me was Children of Men, for some,
yes,
you know, obvious reasons. But also, I just really appreciate how in that movie, in a, you know, by blockbuster standards, a fairly modest budget, I really appreciate how Caron is able to build this very elaborate, mature, gritty, but, you know, very lived in dystopian sci-fi world that can feel at once like, to us, very beguiling, but also just deplete of hope and
shanti.
But no, I mean, I think this movie, it is, I think, kind of burdened by being so reminiscent of so many other movies. I mean, we've already spent a fair bit of this review just mentioning films that we think about while we're watching this. And you know, as much as I want to champion this for being an original film in the sense that it's not based on IP or any existing property, it's just, you know, its own thing, an original story, it does make it a little more frustrating that is, as you've mentioned and a lot of other reviews have noted, like very tropey, very kind of, you know, a little cookie cutter in its storytelling and characterization. But yeah, I mean, as I would expect from Gareth Edwards at this point, his world building is just truly incredible. I mean, he really does, going back to like Monsters, his first film, it's really a marvel how much he can make a very modest budget come alive, almost in like a Robert Rodriguez kind of way, like how he was able to kind of make these very quiet, like small budget films into like these really big spectacle sci-fi films. And I think that's, you know, really been a key factor of his later films. I really do enjoy his 2014 Godzilla. I know people have gripes with it. It's not a perfect film, but I really do love how much he builds to the reveal of Godzilla. The Spielbergianness of it, I think, is very well studied. I think it does really showcase you know, his tutelage in the right ways. And for as much as Rogue One was kind of taken away from him, I agree with you that the fingerprints are all over it. And yeah, I mean, I do kind of wish this had more, for me, of a definitive stamp, at least in the sense of like being a little bit more distinctive story-wise for him. I do really marvel at how much this movie is so much better looking and so much more elaborate and dense visually than movies that we see now that are like two, maybe three times the budget that you just mentioned, like $80 million, which is really impressive. I thought at least it would be $100 million.
I know. Yeah, it really is amazing what they were able to pull off, quite honestly. And it's one of those things where I've noticed where I've seen people just be, you know, kind of sniff at the movie. Well, the people that I've seen who really love it, it's like their reviews of it aren't that concise. Like when I was looking for like positive review, like the really positive reviews, if like if it was above 3.5 stars, people are just like writing huge paragraphs of like how they feel. And, you know, that's always a very specific vibe, I guess. But I also wanted to mention, you know, because you mentioned Monsters, which I think is a very, you know, it's a great movie for what it is, but it's certainly not a movie that like, you know, you got to tell the whole family about. It's a very specific kind of vibe. And then that's why it was kind of interesting to me that when he did go over to Godzilla, which I didn't like nearly as much as some critics do, I guess. Like, I think it's fine. I think Ken Watanabe is the my favorite thing about that movie, quite honestly. So I was thrilled to see him in this. It's hard for me to kind of describe like what it was like kind of seeing this new movie kind of coming together, like kind of on the screen. And just sort of, I felt like I was just very enveloped in this world. And it's weird because like I kind of just felt like it was so familiar. Like there were so many other movies dancing around in this that for some reason it kind of helped me. Like I didn't feel super jarred by it. Like I didn't feel kind of like, where am I? Like I felt kind of immersed. And it's one of those things where like if he had pulled it back a little bit too much, then it might have been even more apparent to me and I might have had a harder time with it. I don't know. I also want to give Gareth Edwards props for writing the like a pro AI movie in our current era of hating AI, especially you know, for film critics who were like, AI, it's taking our jobs, you know, that kind of thing. And I only say that like half tongue in cheek, to be quite honest. But yeah, no, it's just, I just think this is a really good movie. I think it's just really well made. And I think it's just the writing, right? Like, I think that's where everybody's kind of like losing it. They're like, the writing's not great. The final act is very sloppy and haphazard. And I don't know. I don't mind the ending as much personally. Did you?
I mean, I do think the visuals stand out. I agree, I guess, that the script is really, I think, where the shortcomings come for me. In the sense that I do think they're kind of hasty with some of the emotional beats, particularly with John David Washington and a character that I don't really want to reveal too early into this review. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the heart is there. And I do think it really does make it does make you involved in the sense that I think it's very passionate and sincere. But yeah, I do think it gets a little sloppy and a little too busy in a way that I don't really think I found myself too emotionally connected to the film, unfortunately, which is a shame because as much as I was enjoying it on a pure visual level, I always felt like there's kind of like a yardstick that was keeping me from really like enveloping myself into this film, which is a shame because, I mean, like I said, I think the aesthetics of it are great and I really do appreciate the ways that Gareth Edwards as a director is able to continue to evolve and develop his style to be as this dense and visually engaging. But yeah, I don't know. I really am curious to hear why story-wise this connected with you as well as it did.
Story-wise, I think what it is that I'm like trying to assemble my thoughts for it because in my review, I spent a lot of time kind of explaining what about the movie that I liked on like all the other fronts. I didn't write too much about the writing because like my last thought with this movie is that I'm excited more about the prospect of like Gareth Edwards' like true masterpiece is on the horizon, maybe thanks to this movie, and that it, you know, it's a movie that I think is pushing him in that direction. I think what works for me on the writing is that kind of simplicity, which I know that it can be a fine line. And I actually, there was a review, one of the reviews I looked at was kind of like almost kind of complaining actually that sometimes, you know, writing can be, you know, confused, like simple writing can like be bad, I guess, and for lack of a better explanation. But I don't know. I think it was just like, I didn't feel like this movie was like talking down to its audience. If anything, it was almost a little bit too sort of like treacly and emotionally manipulative to some extent. I love the metaphors in this. I think that the movie kind of has guts in terms of how it's sort of just really going after like the way America kind of, you know, especially the trajectory America is on, but also the, you know, America's been doing in terms of like, you know, using drone strikes to wipe out insurgents in the Middle East, stuff like that. And it's an interesting movie in that respect. I've seen some people kind of scoff at that and be sort of like, oh, this movie's super pro-China, so it'll make money in China. And I find that kind of like self-defeating as a criticism, because it's like, well, what? Every movie that's pro-America is doing that because it wants to make money in America. What are you talking about? Like, I think that can sometimes, I think sometimes people can be a little bit, you know, curt with that sort of thing. It's like, yeah, sure. Like, you know, I'm not a pro China person, I guess. I'm not really pro anything in terms of like empires or whatever, but I don't know. I think that this movie has like an interesting point of view on like a future where like technology can be like where it would find its refuge and like what country would take it in. And I thought it was just interesting how the writers kind of turn China into this sort of conglomerate of other countries. But I can see also how some people would look at that and be like, that's hitting pretty close to home in terms of like real life and like certain things that could happen to some of these countries for real in Asia. And so I kind of get that too. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like movies should kind of press buttons like that. What do you think?
Well, I'll admit that that's kind of sounded more like a review of other reviews than your thoughts on the film in some respects. But I think I get where you're coming from, though. I mean, you were talking about the simplicity of the film, and I don't know if I fully agree, but that does remind me of the other day I was talking to like a coworker about Miyazaki films, because I had just recently watched Howl's Moving Castle for the first time last week. And when we were discussing like our favorites of his, I gave the kind of basic answer, which is still the case, which is just that My Neighbor Totoro is and remains my favorite, because I feel like that's the one where he kind of gets it the most streamlined. And I think there's something very pure and honest about that film, that as much as I like something like Princess Mononoke or Spirited Away or some of his later films, I feel like they kind of get bogged down sometimes in the complexity of the rules or the ideas they want to express. And I can get what you're saying in the sense of like, while this movie is a little simple-minded as far as like what it's saying, I think its desire to say it in a more kind of straightforward and accessible way,
it's like Blade Runner. I think people kind of hold Blade Runner as a sacred cow, and I think Blade Runner suffers from some of the same writing problems, but like it has its moments of brilliance, like if you open your mind to them. I think that's where, to me, the common factor between this and Blade Runner and the writing and the world building is it's convincing. It's convincing on like a human level, but also a technical, this is how the world works level. And I think people are over, you know, I think people are harping on like some of the movie's shortcomings in terms of like how its story and plot come together.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Blade Runner, you have to remember, wasn't really accepted with open arms when it came out. It wasn't until exactly later that people crowed to like it, though. In fairness, I mean, the theatrical cut for Blade Runner is definitely weaker than the cuts to follow. I would be surprised if anyone would stick to their guns as far as the theatrical over the director's cut, for instance. But sure. The ultimate cut. I can't keep them straight. There are too many cuts to that movie.
I think people do like the narration, but in a kind of hammy way, I guess.
People like the narration for...
Again, in a hammy way, like a, we're Gen Z, we're just going to be stinkers.
All right, I haven't met those Gen Zs.
Have you met? Well, I mean, have you met the people who worship the Star Wars prequels? It's that kind of energy.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I don't know. It's I feel like that's
this thing's sincere. Let's have fun.
I don't know. I feel like that's a little bit different though, because that seems like a mix of like nostalgia, but also like auteurism. I don't know. It seems like people kind of have reevaluated the prequels because it's so clearly a work of George Lucas and a single-mindedness that people feel has been lost with the commercialization that has come with Disney taking it. Yeah. But you know, going back to this Disney produced film,
yes, this is 20th Century Studios.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I think we know who writes the check. But no, I mean, I do really appreciate, that this movie doesn't, you know, for as much as it does kind of feel a little bit simple as far as the thematics of it, I don't think it sacrifices the grit and some of the more mature, like, violence of it. Like, there are times where I'm like, is this PG-13? Because, like, you know, these weren't robots. This would be probably a pretty decent R right now. And I do really think that Gareth Edwards is really strong as an action director. Like, there's a war sequence, which is alluded to in my name here, which I know most listeners won't be able to catch, but I feel like that scene has some playfulness that I think sometimes gets a little lost in this film. Like, I think it's maybe a little too serious for its own good, and then when it does have humor, it can be a little jarring and weird, like the fridge joke that I think is in the trailer. Feels even weirder in the movie than it does in the trailer, which is saying something. But going back to the war scene, there's I won't give it away, but there's some animal shenanigans that happens that kind of makes me wish that the movie was allowing itself to be maybe just like a tinge sillier than it lets itself be, because I do feel like something that has kind of dragged down some of Gareth Edwards' films is a kind of monotony as far as tone, that he does tend to be very serious and very, you know, kind of morose in the tone. And I think that does kind of prevent me from being more enamored with the film, in this film, I mean, because it's just so, like, kind of intense and, like, this is very serious. And I don't know if you agree with that or not.
It sounds like you wish this movie had some more Marvel humor. You know, it's like when they see the Nomad opening up, you wish the characters are a little bit like, oh, that's the thing in the sky? Yeah, that's the thing in the sky. You can see that too, huh? You know, that's what you wanted?
Yeah, when the robot ship blows up, someone goes, that happened.
Yeah, somebody's just like, I'm sick of AI. I don't want AI to have rights. AI's right behind me, isn't it?
Right. But no, I mean, I don't know. I don't mean to harp on that as much. I guess I just kind of feel
like... two kids having fun.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I do kind of feel like that is something that's more pronounced in me watching this film, is that I do think Gareth Edwards could, you know, maybe lighten up a little bit. But it doesn't sound like you really agree.
Let me get your reaction to this negative review. This is from Esther. So Esther said, a remarkably well-mounted production of a truly heinous script. Gareth Edwards is a star. Let's get this man a real writer next. For everything genuinely great in this movie, there's something moronic and shoddy. Ken Watanabe and Allison Janney are GD professionals. John David Washington, maybe not a good actor. Also, man, they don't even bother to pretend that the robot's human after all stuff is anything but the most recycled sci-fi platitudes. I'm almost okay with it because so much of the imagery is terrific. That death station hovering ominously in the sky is just so good. But maybe this would have been better off being a little more vibey and a lot less plotty. And the thing I wanted to get your reaction to mainly, because I've seen this sentiment going around, John David Washington, how are you feeling about him? We'd do a little bit of a check-in. I think he's a good actor. I think he doesn't have anything to prove, but I think some people are a little bit like, I don't like him. See, I don't like him or his dad. Well, actually, I do like his dad. Scratch that. Like, that's kind of the vibe I'm getting from the John David Washington isn't a good actor discourse, because are they watching these movies? He's a good actor. Like, what? I don't get it.
I do think that has kind of been a baggage that, at least like from Tenet onward, has kind of hindered John David Washington, because like with Black Klansman, people were like, oh wow, like
here he is,
you know, up and coming young little talent. You know, not that he's little, he's like super tall.
Well, I mean, he was in other stuff before that, to be fair.
Right. Well, he was in Ballers and stuff. And he has like supporting roles, but like that's his like, you know, like breakout role. He got like an Oscar nomination stuff. And I guess people have been kind of complaining that I guess there's like a sameness to some of his performance that, you know, I think people just maybe get a little too harsh on him because he's the son of arguably our greatest working movie star right now. So I don't know. I don't think he, you know, rises to the level of someone like Denzel Washington, but I'm not expecting him to. But yeah, I mean, I thought he did a nice, good job here. I mean, there are a couple line reads that felt a little flat, but nothing to make me believe that it's like a bad performance. I really think he's committed to this. And I think his commitment to it helps sell the world, you know, as it is. I mean, I don't think it's just Gareth Edwards' talent for incorporating visual effects and having these kind of big ideas for what the world should be. I think it is the commitment of our two leads to really sell it that makes the film work more than doesn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm pro John David Washington. You know, I would hope he has more, you know, Black Klansman movies in him and less like Malcolm and Marie movies in him, but we'll see.
Yeah. I think Malcolm and Marie is like the one movie where I'm like, his acting isn't, it's just generally like, yeah, it's not good.
But I was going to say Beckett was the one. That was the one, right, for Netflix. That was the one, yeah. I was kind of like, I don't know. Like, I applaud him for trying to do this, but I feel like he isn't quite charismatic enough to carry a film like this, but that could certainly change with time.
I would slightly disagree with that. I think it's the same thing with Tenet. Like, Beckett and Tenet, those are movies where I just think that it's not his fault. And I don't think there's much he could have done.
Whoa.
Amsterdam, I didn't watch. So, you know.
Oh, okay.
That might be another.
I did forget about him. He's not very good in Amsterdam, but that's nobody's fault. That's everyone's performance in that movie is like they're in a different film.
Okay.
But no, Tenet, you talk as if it's bad, but you seem to be mistaken because Tenet is good. And he's good in it.
All right, Cooper. Whatever you say, huh? Yeah. Let's look at we'll go to a very positive review next, and we'll end kind of in the middle reviews, because that's more honest, I think, to the critical reaction. It's not a hint to the Rotten Tomatoes, though. I'm just talking about generally. All right. This is a 5-star review. Okay. As someone, this is from a movie good or movie bad writing in to Letterboxd.
Very binary. Movie good or movie bad. You know, some movies are just
maybe
okay.
That's the joke. Maybe that's what they're going for. I don't know. So this is what they said. MGOMB. As someone whose mother and family was displaced due to the Vietnam War, I felt as if this was one of the only films to truly capture the atrocity of American imperialism, and did so in a way that felt so important, considering the very recent and forgotten increase in violence against Asian people. Just an overall visual masterpiece on every front. No one is arguing that, but I found myself so moved by John David Washington and Madeline Unavoyles all throughout this film, and I'm a little sad to see not everyone felt as strongly about it as me. This felt like a grand epic with meaningful social commentary that spoke out to me. So while most feel disappointed based off of the few reviews I glanced at, this is a favorite I will revisit often. And I guess, like me, Will, it's like the positive sort of like commentary on this movie is like, the negative reviews are too mean. Like, that's kind of like what I was doing earlier a little bit. But it's kind of, I think in my case, it's because I struggled to defend the movie on like nothing but merits, because this feels like a very subjective thing, even more than usual. I just feel like there aren't a lot of objective things that I can point to besides what we've already mentioned. And I think this person is kind of in a similar boat, it seems like.
Yeah. And it does remind me, and I'll try to thread delicately here. I have seen kind of mixed responses to the film's portrayal of Asia and New Asia in terms of culture and whatnot. And I'm definitely not the person to talk about that or evaluate that.
Here, of course.
Yeah, I would just say there's, you know, a lot of writing, good and bad, online and videos and whatnot. I would definitely encourage people to check those out. Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting conversation. I definitely am curious to kind of look into that more, because like I said, I've just seen some kind of wildly sort of polarized reactions from Asian writers and critics as far as the film's portrayal. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't feel personally, like I said, that was like too offensive, but I'm not going to be the voice there, obviously. So
yeah, it really is like a range, because yeah, I've seen, you know, people like Asian writers being like, you know, this movie gets it really well. Maybe not perfect, but like certainly right direction. Other people who are just like, I like the movie a lot, but these are things that kind of hold it back. And it's just all over the place. I think the reaction, which just shows you that like, yeah, people and Asian people too, like they're not a monolith, right? You're going to find different reactions everywhere you look.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I didn't want to make it even seem like that. I just mean that. Like,
I don't think you did.
Yeah. I just think it's very fascinating that the conversation's been so diverse and people are saying like wildly different things, and you know, it just makes for a very fascinating conversation around the film for sure.
Agreed. Okay, and then we'll finish out. I have two more kind of like in between reviews. So this one's from Seth's reviews, writing into Letterboxd. Visually, this is unquestionably a triumph. Jaw-dropping scenes appear frequently, giving complete immersion in Gareth Edwards' futuristic vision. Unfortunately, this does not compensate the lack of fresh insights on man versus artificial intelligence or what it means to be human. In fact, I'm not sure it says much at all. Furthermore, I found the script to be quite uninspired and emotionally devoid. There are some fantastic things here for sure, but I'd be lying if I said I wasn't disappointed due to the inflated expectations I placed on it. For me, I didn't have inflated expectations. I kind of went into, like, I did start hearing like this movie's actually like super good right before I saw it, but in the lead up, I was a little bit more of like, ah, this could go either way. Especially because I didn't love Rogue One. I didn't love Godzilla. So, you know, I really liked Monsters and I was hoping he was kind of returning to that form. I don't think this is emotionally devoid. I think if anything, I think the relationships between John David Washington and the child character in this, and I think the kind of the setup, like with him and like the chemistry he has with Gemma Chan, even in flashback and even just kind of getting glimpses of like what their lives are like before the movie even starts. I actually thought that there was like a beating heart there. And I think that's why like everything else kind of worked for me, because I was following along with this guy. I like that he wasn't super likable, because he is a bit confusing and he's a bit of a hard ass. He's got a bit of a Han Solo thing going on where he's not a great person, but that's kind of what I like. This movie actually had a character arc for him. I don't know. I want to push back against that kind of sentiment, because I do think maybe that's why I'm being so nice to John David Washington, because I mean, I don't know. He sold that for me.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, as I said before, this is a pretty earnest film. I agree. I think it has his heart on its sleeve here. But I do think, and this kind of goes even to Gareth Edwards' films I like Godzilla and Monsters, that he can be at times a little, I think, dramatically inert as far as like some of the more emotional beats. And I think it's a little bit smoother here actually than it has been in the past. Like, I think it's a little bit more jarring in something like Godzilla when like certain characters die. I think it's a little, I don't know. I don't think his strong suit has necessarily always been in these kind of more big emotionally devastating moments.
Well, is that really him though? Or is that Chris Weitz? That's the thing. I know he did the screenplay as well. But and you know, to be fair, I think he does have a story that has the story credit. So maybe I'm overselling Chris Weitz's contribution. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just gonna say that, you know, since Gareth Edwards is the story and the screenwriter and the director here,
co-screenwriter. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Sorry. But yeah, I mean, I think a little bit more of the blame would go towards him than Chris Weitz. But yeah, I mean, you know, throw him under the bus too, I guess.
Can I tell you what was like a pain though? It was like seeing all the, you know, the chat GPT jokes around this movie. It's like, oh, AI wrote the script. It's like, all right, yeah, how many people need to make that joke before it gets retired? All right, here's our last one, and then we'll play the Rotten Tomatoes game. All right, so this is from Cinema Joe. Read his work here before. A movie that consistently takes your breath away with its sheer scale and visual artistry, only to fumble majorly with its disjointed script that never gets really good until the final act. Rarely gives us an opportunity to sit and breathe with any of the characters or the world, so it's difficult to become fully invested in the journey. I don't even mind that it's derivative, just wish it didn't feel like it was cut into a million pieces, only to be put clumsily back together. That being said, it has more heart than most blockbusters, so it has that going for it. Release the Edwards cut? And this to me is like great one to end on, because I think this is the most kind of like balanced. Yeah. I really can see the perspective here, because yeah, I mean, I do think that like there were times when I did kind of just want to sit and breathe. There were times that we do sit and breathe for too long. Like there's a whole scene in this like involving like, you know, there's a whole battle going on and then characters are sitting around a table and just kind of like talking about stuff. And I was kind of confused about that. I was like, what are we doing? And then there are other times where it's moving so fast. It's a little bit like, you know, this character died. And like, we really aren't just like, the characters aren't even reckoning with that. Like, so that was certainly a thing. I wasn't sure if you had a similar reaction though.
Well, I mean, that's kind of getting into what I was saying before. I think that's where sort of his, Mao's dramatic inertness can kind of come in, is that I don't think he really is able to quite sell moments like that. And I don't know if that's in this case, if it's more of a like there's just too much, and even at like 2.5 hours it feels kind of choppy at times. And
it's not, yeah. Well, it's not 2.5, it's 2 hours and 13 minutes.
Okay, well, pushing 2.5 hours then, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was just like there's, like you said, like a longer cut that maybe got a little chopped up here for the service of being a more presentable film, or what have you. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think like this review was saying, like, I think it's less that's derivative. I mean, we kind of harped on that a little bit, but I don't really take as much issue with that as much as the story feeling a little clumsy, particularly in some of the more emotionally heavy moments. But I do think, in terms of just building this world and showing the characters living therein and really making that feel alive and apparent, Gareth Edwards continues to shine.
And I do want to finish out, because we didn't mention him already, but we did mention the cinematography quite a bit. This is Greg Fraser and his frequent co-collaborator when he's a cinematographer, Oren Sofer. So Greg Fraser, we've seen him do a lot of great films as a DP. Dune, probably the direct relation to this. He did also do Rogue One. Just last year he did The Batman. So yeah. I think, yeah, if anybody can make a kind of sci-fi or comic book world really feel real and lived in, like we were saying, he's certainly one in the biz. Funny enough, he also did Lion, which you and I were kind of talking about, I think, before the show. We were talking about Garth Davis.
Sure, yeah.
I wasn't expecting to bring Lion into the actual pod, but that's where we ended up, I guess.
Yeah. I thought there were two cinematographers though for this film.
That's what I said. Greg Fraser, along with his frequent co-collaborator, Oren Sofer.
Okay, sorry. Gotcha.
Because you didn't hear me because you were so fixated on Greg Fraser. Is it Fraser or Fraser? And I mean, I understand. I think I did both pronunciations within this like paragraph.
Sure. How are you feeling about the Fraser reboot that's going to be on Paramount Plus?
Let's play the Rotten Tomatoes game.
Did you hear that iCarly got canceled, by the way?
No, but I mean, I guess I'm not really that surprised. I feel like the Jeanette McCurdy stuff really made that whole show feel a little bit like, sure. But whatever. It didn't find right. Didn't it have like 3 seasons? That's enough.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Well, I think 4 seasons now, from what I read.
Good enough. Sure. It's fine. All right.
iCarly said her last cuss.
260 reviews counted for the creator so far. What do you think, Will? What's your guess? It'd be funny if you were like 97.
Right. I'm going to say like 84%.
Nope, it's 98. Just kidding. It's 68.
Oh, really? Wow.
68. Genuinely surprising. That's kind of what I mean. It's like, I just think critics are kind of in their feelings about this one. And I think it's kind of interesting that that's the case. But what about audience score? We have 500 plus verified ratings. People are coming out to see it. What do you think?
I have to imagine it's a little bit kinder than that. I don't know. I guess I thought with critics, it'd be more like, general consensus is like 3 out of 5, so that bumps it up to like the 80s or higher.
I would have thought that too, sure.
But yeah, I guess with audiences, I'm gonna say 76%.
Oh, so close. Better than you usually get with audience scores. 77%. That is a tough one. Yeah, yeah, you're only one off. Not bad. Yeah. Cinema score. We haven't done that in a while. It's been in theaters. Cinema score, what do you think?
Is it B+?
It's B+. You're on a roll. Thanks. Okay. I've just gotten so used to you not getting these right. Okay. Then we'll finish out with Letterboxd. That was a mean dig. 84,000 watches. Definitely more than Flora and Son. Sure. On this recent episode. But yeah, what do you think the average rating on Letterboxd is right now?
Is it like 3.2?
You were on a roll. 3.4. That's not bad.
Okay.
A little bit higher. A little bit higher.
Yeah.
I feel like the Letterboxd crowd is like, yeah, that's pretty much like when I was going through it, I saw mainly 3.5 stars, like a lot of 3.5 stars and a lot of threes. I didn't see a ton of fours or higher, and I didn't see like a ton of 2.5s or lower, but you know, they were there to be sure. But all right, the creator's still playing in theaters. I mean, I guess for a little bit longer. I mean, there's not a lot coming out right now. I think the next big thing on my radar for, I guess not a movie that's going to make a ton of money, but the next movie I'm like really looking forward to is Killers of the Flower Moon, which I'm seeing next week. There's also Dicks the Musical. Are you planning to see that? I'm not going to make it to my screening.
Sure. I mean, I'd be interested. I mean, if you want to talk about it.
We'll see. I don't know if I'll be able to catch it, but you know, I think it'd be fun. And then other than that, I mean, we have Wish coming out in November, the next big Disney movie. Is there a big, like, yeah, I don't know, like October, November movie though, that's like bigger than those? Like, what do we have coming up? I feel like there's got to be something big. I'm not even like doing a bit. Like, I'm generally, because there's Marvels, but like, okay. Is there not like a big movie? Like, you know, like there's no big Star Wars movie, obviously. There's no big Marvel movie. Like, there's no big Warner Brothers movie. What's happening?
Well, I mean, Dune was supposed to come out at the beginning of November.
That's right.
So like the Marvels is coming out in early November as well.
And I think that'll make a couple bucks.
Sure. There's like a new Hunger Games as well.
Yeah, that might make a couple more bucks. I don't know. Maybe that won't be a big surprise, but
I don't know.
I don't know. The holiday season, it seems a little boring. Is that too mean? Like, I don't know.
No, it's because a lot of stuff got moved because of the which, I mean, like we said, will hopefully be resolved pretty soon. A lot of the movies that are going to be coming out are either like films that they feel confident will sell outside of the stars involved, or just films that are going to coast on their awards potential.
I'm seeing stuff, man, like Good Burger 2.
Sure.
Jeez, there's Napoleon. That could be a big one. I do want to see Napoleon. Okay, so there's a couple more things. Poor Things, if we're going to just go through the list Wonka. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's like Netflix stuff as well, like May December, Maestro, like a few other things that are coming out.
There's another one. It's on the tip of my tongue. That's a big Netflix one, but I'm forgetting. Rustin, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the next like Higher Ground Barack Obama thing. now I'm looking at the list now. I'm seeing like Ferrari. I'm seeing, you know, Aquaman. I forgot there's going to be an Aquaman movie. There's going to be a new Chicken Run movie on Netflix. Yeah. There we go. Now we're talking. Okay. We can have some fun. Oh, no, Will. Oh, no. Magazine Dreams. Oh, no.
Is that still coming out?
That's still, I mean, it has a release date in December.
Sure.
I guess they're going to try to squeeze it in.
Sure. So next week.
Silent Night.
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
I saw the trailer.
John Woo.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that before Saw X. Looks like fun.
Okay. Sorry for cutting you off. Oh, and Saltburn. One more.
Sure. Yeah, I was going to say, so next week we're going to be talking...
all those movies that we just mentioned, yeah.
Yeah.
Squeeze them in.
And Canine Mutant Colony, or whatever the freaking film's called. Is that the plan?
How do you watch the freaking movie, though?
Showtime,
you said?
Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus, I have that.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess you just got to get... You might need to like add like a free week subscription to it. But
well, I have Paramount Plus. I mean, how else am I going to watch Bar Rescue?
Sure, yeah. But yeah, I think that'd be a fun little thing. You could kind of like talk about Friedkin's legacy, and then that way we can talk about, you know, the original Exorcist and talk about this new one. I don't know.
Lots to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's a fun idea.
All right, well, we'll see you all on the next episode of CinemaHawks. Thank you so much for listening. From the Internet, California, I'm John Negroni.
And from the Internet, Pennsylvania, I'm Will Ashton. I was going to do a robot joke.
You could have just been like, I'm Will Ashton.
Yeah, no, I thought that's too obvious. I wanted to make a reference to 2005's Robots, because I was going to say that was another film that might have been an inspiration for the creator. Obviously not. Why was this movie not called, what's the word they keep using in the film?
True Love?
No. That's two words.
Well, that's what the original title was.
No. But like they were going to call it like...
Nirmada?
Nirmada, yeah. Why isn't it called Nirmada?
See you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.